Welcome to the Midnight Society. I'm Erin.
And I'm Amanda.
And we're here to talk about ghost stories. True ghost stories. Things that have happened to us, things that we want to investigate, and things that have happened to you.
Email us your experiences at midnightsocietyae@gmail.com or leave us your firsthand story as a voicemail at 978-938-4-BOO.
I think we need more wine.
I think we always need more wine. Are we recording?
Yes.
Welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to the Midnight Society.
We're here again.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Amanda.
And tonight we're talking about
haunted houses. Dun-na-na. We didn't agree on what theme music to use.
Yeah. Mouth doodads are fine.
So, full disclosure, listeners, we have been working on this podcast for over a year now.
Which is insane.
It is insane.
You haven't heard anything yet.
But you're gonna.
But you're gonna, yeah.
Because you know what we did actually was we went back through all of the stories that we've gotten, and we found that there is actually a thread connecting a good many of them, which is
haunted houses. I mean, haunted houses are very prevalent in our culture and society right now. I mean, for me, I went to haunted houses for fun all the time, and I feel like people do that still to this day.
You know what's not fun is being in a haunted house, but what is fun is thinking about going to a haunted house.
Oh, I disagree. I love being there. But not only that, but there's been the Netflix show, The Haunting of Hill House, right? Mm-hmm. I got the name right. I always want to call it like a mashup of five other haunted house movies, but it's a thing. Haunted houses.
Yep.
So we talked to a few people about their experiences. And as Amanda mentioned, we saw this theme where a lot of people experience stuff in their homes, which is very alarming because your home is where you're comfortable. It's where you want to hang your hat up and just unburden yourself. It's not a place you want to go and feel on edge.
Yeah, it's not the place that you want to have to think about the other people who have lived there before you. You move into a new home and you feel those echoes.
Oh, yeah.
It is a real thing.
You can pick up on a vibe pretty quickly, I feel like.
Yeah, totally. And so it's those nights that I'm by myself at home when I hear a creak somewhere, my mind goes elsewhere and I cannot catch up with it.
Yeah, and that's a thing. Like, our brains are actually wired to kind of recognize threats.
Yep.
There's more space in our brains that is actually dedicated to recognizing threats than recognizing fun, pleasure, happiness, because we are creatures that used to live in the wild and had to recognize that, like, there was a tribe that was going to come and kill us, or there was an animal that was going to come and kill us. So our brains are still evolving and they haven't caught up quite yet to our current cultural
my
society.
Brain is fully evolved. I've just watched many crappy horror movies.
So, but you're right. I think, you know, moving into a new space, you can pick up on that immediately.
Absolutely. So I heard this really creepy story the other day. Every time I listen to it, gives me goosebumps. So let's just jump right in.
My name is Colleen. I am originally from Winthrop, Massachusetts. That's actually where the ghost story takes place, was my family house in Winthrop. The story is actually my dad's story, but he is no longer with us to tell it. So the story takes place when my parents bought their house. All the houses in Winthrop, or the majority of the houses in Winthrop, had been like summer homes back when people didn't go very far to take their vacations, people who lived in Boston. So this was an old summer house, and it had had like maybe one, I think, full-time occupant before they moved in. And the house was cheap. It wasn't in the best shape, but, you know, my dad was very handy and he was a carpenter. And so they were going to buy this house and fix it up. And they had only been married for a little while. And so this was going to be their home. They moved in. The story takes place the day that they moved into the house, as he told it. Now, my dad was not a superstitious man. He was not, I know everybody always says this, but was not somebody who necessarily believed in ghosts or thought any of this stuff was real. He was a skeptic. So, but he, I've heard him tell this story many occasions, and he tells it 100% serious, 100% this is a fact. So they moved in. My mom had been doing her things, putting stuff away. My dad had been doing his stuff, putting his stuff away. My mom was in the kitchen, and my dad was in the shower. He was setting up his workshop. So my mom was upstairs, and she was putting away whatever kitchen stuff. And they had been working independently for a while until my dad hears the sound of glass breaking. And he says, oh, shit, Pam must have broken something. So he walks up to the staircase and, you know, kind of yells up and says, you know, are you all right? And a very confused, yeah, why, is my mother's reply. I heard the glass breaking. Would you break? Are you okay? What happened? I didn't break a glass. My dad says, you know, like, are you pulling my leg here? What's happening? And she says, no, I didn't break anything. Like, I'm serious. He says, okay, fine. Doesn't believe her, but figures he'll just go back to doing his thing. A couple more minutes go by, and he hears again glass shattering. So he comes up, and he goes, all right. He walks upstairs and goes, I heard it that time. What did you break? And she was sitting there reading a magazine. She says, I'm taking a break. I'm not even putting anything away. And he looks around the kitchen. There's no broken glass. Nothing's in disarray. She's just sitting there. And he says, okay. She says, why? What's going on? Nope. Don't worry about it. Never mind. He goes back downstairs. So he's feeling a little bit weird, but he's like, you know, going to finish his task. So he hears the sound of breaking glass again, and he realizes it's not coming from upstairs. It's coming from the other part of the cellar. Like, there's, it was kind of like the unfinished side. Like, there's like a big brick wall, and you could kind of like walk around. And he hears again the glass shattering, and it's happening more rapidly now. And glass breaks, and a glass breaks, and a glass breaks. And so he goes to check it out, and he's walking over, and he's thinking, oh, shit, there's somebody in here. So he gets a tool or a baseball bat or something, and he's, you know, gives the warning, like, all right, buddy, whatever you're doing in here, like, time to get out. So he walks around the corner, and there he sees an old man, and he's sitting on this big dirt pile. And my dad says he just froze because this wasn't an intruder. This was clearly an old man sitting there, but he knew that there was something different about this guy. There was something weird. There was something off. And he just kind of stands there and stares at him. The guy doesn't say anything. He picks up a bottle. There are all these old whiskey bottles all over this pile of dirt. And he looks at it, and he shakes it, and it's empty, and he throws it against the wall. So he picks up another one, looking empty, throws it against the wall. My dad says, turns back for a second, because he's completely flabbergasted, doesn't know what to do, turns back, and the man is gone. There is absolutely nothing there but the pile of dirt and all the empty whiskey bottles. So my dad is, you know, freaking out at this point and kind of like walks away and like sits down and has a beer or smokes a cigarette or whatever he needs to do, or go outside and clear his head. And then he goes back and he there's this huge pile. He's looking through all these bottles. And at the very bottom of it, he finds one old whiskey bottle, just a tiny bit left in it. So he asks the realtor, you know, who lived here before? they tell him there, you know, there's an old man who lived here. You know, sadly, he died of cirrhosis of the liver before, you know, he moved in. So my dad threw away all of the bottles except for the one whiskey bottle that had that little bit left, and he kept it above his workbench so that if the guy came back and he needed his whiskey, it would be there. He wouldn't have to, you know, look around for it. It would just be right there, plain as day. He could have it. And he never saw him again. When we moved from that house, my dad brought the whiskey bottle with him just in case for some reason, and he always kept it above his workbench. So if he ever came back, you know, they could sit down and have a drink, but he said he never, ever saw him again.
Wow.
Isn't that incredible?
What a story. I mean, the fact that not only did he hear it, but he actually saw this old man, I feel like that's a rare story to get.
Well, and just a little bit of background on Colleen. I talked with her for a while, and she had a lot of stories. She's had a lot of experiences. And so this story kind of stood out from her dad, who she said was really a lifetime skeptic. And neither before nor after this incident did he say anything else had happened. And so it lends some credibility to it for sure. But yeah, I just the imagery, I cannot get over it. Every time I hear that story, I get goosebumps.
I know. I can't help but think of him as a leprechaun, though. I don't know why. the drunk on the hill, what? On the dirt mound.
Is this, am I not understanding because I've never seen the movie Leprechaun?
Maybe, I don't know. I just can't help but imagine this, like, little wrinkly old person dressed in green throwing whiskey bottles around.
I always imagine the guy from the new Twin Peaks who's, like, covered in oil. That's who I imagine on this, like, dirt pile smashing bottles against the wall.
We'll never know.
And so, listeners, Aaron and I were recently talking about the different types of hauntings, and we're going to break it down for you a little bit. But I want to start by saying that it's really difficult to categorize every story that we hear.
Yeah, because I think there's an argument for, you know, a little bit of mm-hmm. each category. So why don't we just go ahead and at least mention two of them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a residual haunt, and then there's an intelligent haunt. And originally, Amanda and I were thinking this could be residual.
If you're not familiar, residual haunting is a little bit like a broken record. And so it's the type of haunting that you see where the same situation is repeating itself over and over, the same scenario. A lot of times, people who experience these things kind of attribute them to trauma or maybe some sort of strong emotion. So you might see somebody reenacting a traumatic experience over and over.
Or even like the morning of the thing, like they were doing their normal routine mm-hmm. and then
the moments traumatic. Before.
Yeah, exactly.
And so typically when you see residual hauntings, they're not aware of what's going on around them. They're not aware of the living going on around them. So these are fairly unmalicious. They're not typically something that really interferes with your life, as long as you can ignore them, but they are something that happen from time to time.
Right, and I think we categorized this into residual because mm-hmm. we knew that this was an older gentleman who died of cirrhosis of the liver, so clearly drinking
mm-hmm.
was a big thing for him. So drinking and throwing bottles must have been like a habit.
Right, yeah, we were thinking of that repetition. But even just as we listened to that, I started thinking, but when they put that bottle with a last sip of whiskey up on the tool bench, they stopped seeing it.
Yeah, and I think too, it could also be attributed to, like, that's what he needed to kind of have his final send-off yeah. also. So maybe that was his closure. Mm-hmm. Like, great, got my bottle. I can now go home.
Yeah, I mean, they did say that, like, the realtor said, like, this guy had pretty much recently died. And mm-hmm. so this could possibly have been the first people he had seen since he had recurred in this situation in his old home. So mm-hmm. that would make sense. But I was thinking more that maybe there was some awareness there. Maybe that it could be more on the intelligent side.
Right. And so intelligent haunts is when the entity, the spirit, whatever you want to call it, has awareness of their surroundings. So they're actually interacting with you or somehow aware. Like, those are usually the things that you can kind of ask a question to, and something you get a response on an EVP or something like that. Mm-hmm. And in most cases, they don't intend to harm or scare. They're just... And I think actually what I've heard is a lot of times they're not even aware sometimes that they're dead. Mm-hmm. So it's really not their intent to freak you out. And so in those instances, I think you hear a lot of people being like, oh, well, I just said, like, hey, I'm not comfortable with this. And then the activity stopped. Mm-hmm. But we do have an interesting story from another friend of ours. And this is a family friend of mine who happened to hear that I was doing this podcast and wanted to share her story. So I'm going to go ahead and go to hers.
Sweet.
This is Gail, and I have 3 years ago, I moved into a house that was built in 1895. And there are three sections of the house. It was originally a church. They called it the church house. It was the Church of Latter-day Saints meeting house. So there is a stone house out back where people lived, and then the meeting house where I'm now living. Upstairs, from in the original part of the house, upstairs, there is a room that I call the room of closets. There are five different closets inside this room, and it appears to be where the housekeeper had the linens and did ironing and so on. And when we were first moving in, we were painting in there, and there was a knock on the wall. And my sisters, who were painting in there, were quite taken aback anyway, and called. And when I walked in there, they knocked on the wall, and the wall knocked back. Whoa. So then they knocked on the wall in a different pattern, and the wall knocked back. The dogs were there, and because the dogs were not upset at all, I figured it must be a friendly ghost that I have in the house. Yeah, it was very odd. And when we finished painting, there have been, you know, at first I thought maybe there was something on the outside of the house that was hitting against the side of the house, but that was not the case. So it was a very wild time of just being in that room and knowing there was somebody else in the room with us. Now, a couple weeks ago, I got up in the middle of the night. There was cigarette smoke smell. And in a house this old, you know, the first thing when you smell smoke, you think, oh, my God, the wires are in the house or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it was just in the section outside of the bedroom, and it was very distinct. Well, because I'm an ex-smoker, very distinctly cigarette smoke. And I thought, well, this is really weird. But, of course, then I was awake for the next 2 hours expecting the house to go up in flames. So I finally get to sleep. The next night, I get up, more cigarette smoke. Only this time, the picture that I have in the bathroom was absolutely turned sideways in its frame. So it's on a hook at the top of the frame. Mm-hmm. Oh, no. Now it's sideways in the bathroom on the side of the frame where there is no hook. Just the oddest thing. But again, the dogs never woke up, never bothered them at all. Not the smoke, not the noise of the picture, nothing.
Wow.
Gail. So the reason I'm thinking that is an intelligent haunt is because the sisters knock and it repeats the pattern back. Yep. So it's interacting.
The wall knocked back.
The wall knocked back. It's intelligent. It heard what they were doing and it was repeating it.
Yeah. There is a lot to unpack there, though. Like, so at the beginning, she offhandedly mentioned, I lived in what used to be a Latter-day Saints meeting house.
Yes. And so Amanda and I today, funny enough, both, like, emailed each other and had just done the same thing, which was to look up, like, what do the Latter-day Saints think about ghosts. And first thing I learned is that Latter-day Saints are Mormons. Yeah. Didn't know that.
Hello.
Hello.
Then we Googled, what do Mormons think about ghosts? Yeah. Turns out they fucking hate them.
Well, yeah, it turns out they don't have an official stance on it, but it seemed like everything that we came across was like, oh, they're demons, they're evil, and things mm-hmm. like that.
I saw some actual quotes from, you know, the scripture for the Latter-day Saints group, and what they said was, quote, righteous spirits have nothing but contempt and pity for the attempts of mediums to make contact with them. And really what they're trying to say there is that any spirits who deign to make contact with you must be degenerate or Satan or demonic. These aren't the righteous spirits. They're the shitty spirits.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that probably most of the stories we heard kind of fit loosely into that intelligent haunting area.
Yeah. And actually, so again, just to repeat, mm-hmm. intelligent, your ghosts are interacting in some way or seem to have some awareness of their surroundings. Residual, it's a broken record. You could have done construction on your house, and if you used to see the ghost go through one door and you moved that door to the other side of the room, they would still go through the area that that door used to be in. They have no idea where they are, what's happening. They're just repeating an action. And then there's another category or a set of categories that are also actually pretty interchangeable. They're actually most commonly interchangeable. Mm-hmm. And those are?
Poltergeist and demonic. When we talk about poltergeist and demonic hauntings, those can be interchangeable in the fact that those hauntings will fuck with you in some way. But I think it's pretty important to say that demonic isn't included on every spectrum of hauntings that we've read about.
Right, because some people don't believe in demons.
Right, and I think that the weird gray area that I'm thinking of is that poltergeists typically in culture are characterized as this like very aggressive, very malicious or mischievous.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about the movie Poltergeist, which I still have nightmares about to this day, that seemed very much...
Cow into the light, Carol Ann.
That seemed very much malicious.
Yeah.
Like, that was awful. They freaking sucked her into a television, mm-hmm. which is an argument for that being demonic and not actually a poltergeist. And that is where things can get a little blurry. To give you a high-level overview of what a poltergeist is, according to us and our own mm-hmm. conversations and some research, of course, we've backed this up a little bit.
We're scientists.
We wear lab coats. So basically, a poltergeist is things like are moving around in your house. It's almost like telekinesis in a way.
Mm-hmm.
It's erratic activity. Maybe one day you just hear like a door opening, and then the next day all the furniture is in the middle of the room.
Right.
And then a week later something happens, and then something happens like multiple days in a row, and then nothing happens for a month. They've also found that a lot of this activity with poltergeists are geared around preteens, particularly ladies. And I'm going to just say, hello, hormones, because I'm sure that has something to do with it.
The common thread amongst all of the stories about poltergeist that we see or all of the accounts of what that might be is that there is what is usually referred to as a catalyst. And that would be the person that it centers around. It doesn't typically occur when they're not present.
Exactly.
And so there are a lot of cases where instead of spirits, it's actually attributable to telekinesis or some other psychic power sort of overflowing from that vessel, that catalyst.
Exactly. And I think that's actually a good clue to determine if your experience is a poltergeist or what could be considered demonic. Mm-hmm. Because a demonic haunting, it won't necessarily be around one person, at least not initially.
Right.
But what is similar is that it might start off slow also, where it's cupboards opening, a tap on the door or on your wall that you can't explain.
Mm-hmm.
But then what happens that's different with demonic is it starts to get a little bit more in your face. You might get scratches on your back. They say typically it's like three scratches. You might get your hair pulled or covers pulled off your bed or your bed starts shaking.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you want to call in the big guns and get someone to come and help you.
demonic activity is usually characterized by the need to inflict fear yes. and to retain control.
Exactly. They feed off the fear. So the more fear they're creating from you, the more power you're giving them.
Yep. So you can hear how confusing it might be when you're talking about these two categories, how many places that they overlap. But we do have a couple examples for you of what we think fall into each category. So I'm going to start here with a friend, Tony, who told me about what I think might have been poltergeist activity.
Okay, well, basically I was living on Bow Street, and I was living with my girlfriend at the time. It was a one bedroom on the first floor. It's an old captain's house, you know, and they divided it up into apartments. You know how they do that. And one afternoon, she was at work, and I'm at home, and I took a nap. It was like a Saturday afternoon. Took a nap. I had the windows open. It was like a brisk sort of September, whatever day. Reading a book, fell asleep, and I woke up, and the blankets on my feet had like flipped, like she, you know, like she had like flipped the blankets, like, hey, get up, you know, it's time to, you've been, you know, asleep all morning. And I was fully expecting to see her standing there to like give me shit for, you know, taking a huge nap in the middle of the day. And there was nobody there. And I was like, all right, well, you know, the windows are open, something, you know, whatever. I didn't really put too much stock into it. But the windows were open, so I figured, all right, maybe it's that. You know, maybe that's what's going on. So, like, fast forward a year later, and it's, like, 2:30, 3:30 in the morning, somewhere in that neighborhood. And the blankets on my couch flipped off my feet again. By this time, she and I had broken up. I was sleeping on the couch, and she was, you know, using the bedroom. She wasn't home that night. There was nobody around. There's no windows open. The blankets just did that flip thing again. And I'm like wide awake now. So I have like a little flip phone, and I kind of started taking pictures around, and I had that like, you know, I don't know if it's like a flee or fight sort of that feeling on the back of your neck, but all that was going on. So I took some pictures. And then, you know, I calmed down, you know, maybe 10, 15 minutes later, jumped back into bed. I didn't think anything of it. I just went back to sleep. So the next day, when Nicole had come back home, I was like, hey, let me ask you, you know, we'd never really talked about this, but has anything weird ever happened? Because she was home during the days, and I was home, like I was working nights. So she would be home alone all day. I'd come home at night, you know, and then you know, go to sleep. And she's like, you know, some really odd things always happen in here, but she wouldn't go into specifics. I pressed. I couldn't get any more details. So I told her what happened to me with the foot thing, and she was just kind of like, yeah, I mean, that kind of goes along, right along the lines of what's happened to me in the past. But again, you know, she wouldn't go into detail, and I didn't want to push it. So later on, I'm going through these flip phone pictures. And like I said, they're awful, you know, but in one of them, I was able to sort of make out a kind of a face sitting at the foot of the couch. And maybe it's matrixing, I don't know. And then there's another one where I'm out into the main living room, dining room, and there's this like giant white misty thing. You know, again, who knows? It could be matrixing, old crappy phones. Well, here's the thing is I took between 15 and 20 pictures, and only two of them came out with, like, this big white mist thing and that, like, weird, creepy half-skull face thing.
I love the fact that this story happened, this story came to us, because this is so common. It's the little things that your instincts tell you don't fit in that ultimately build up over time and lead you to believe that maybe there's something else going on. It's not always somebody knocking on the wall. It's not always somebody kicking you in the behind. It might just be somebody flipping the blankets off of your feet.
I think there is something to be said
for just your radar going off and mm-hmm. being like, this isn't right. Plus, when I was doing the research on what's a demonic haunting, one of the examples is the sheets get pulled off of your bed. So, you know.
Fucking with you in your most comfortable and vulnerable moments. Exactly. I suppose that would be on the corner of demonic.
Yeah, and the other reason, though, that I am kind of like, I don't know, maybe it's poltergeist, because clearly he mentioned he was going through a breakup, mm-hmm. which is a stressful time. He's sleeping on the couch. His girlfriend's ex-girlfriend is sleeping in the bedroom.
But what I want to say here before we move on any further is just that those first three categories, residual, intelligent, poltergeist, are the accepted categories. And so now what we're moving into is the realm of the unaccepted, the realm of the more demonic.
I actually have my own kind of story with this. When we first started recording this podcast,
Literally when we first started, though.
Yeah, like within 3 days after the first time we got a group of friends together to talk about their experiences. Mm-hmm. And I will say it, we used a Ouija board, and I'm usually the number one.
Because we're fucking idiots.
And I'm usually the number one person that's like, it's all about your intent and make sure you close it and open it in a proper
way. I'm the one who was like, give me the wine, I'll do the Ouija.
And what ended up happening for me is, like, 2 days after we first recorded, I woke up kind of, you know, bleary-eyed, mm-hmm. eyes slowly opening, and I saw a fucking hag face right in front of my face. Crackly skin. It was off-colored. It wasn't like human flesh-colored. It was a little like palish, greenish, ill-colored. And it was just in my face, and it kind of was like, ha! Like... And it was split. It was that quick.
Ha! Yeah, that moment where you wake up.
Yeah. And I was just like, fuck you, not today. And I rolled over and I went back to bed.
It's a unique reaction.
Yeah, because this is the thing that we've read about the demonic hauntings. They feed off of fear. And if you give it fear, it will build. Mm-hmm. And I honestly was just like, because of that information, I know that I can have some control over this situation. And my control is I'm not afraid. I'm going back to bed.
Fear requires consent.
Exactly. So, but that wasn't the end of it. A few days later, I was upstairs. We have like a refinished attic that serves as like our living room. And it was February, and all of a sudden I'm watching television, and three giant moths appeared out of nowhere. And I've never seen a moth. We've lived here for 5 years.
So weird.
We've never seen moths here. And they were like, I'm talking silver dollar sized. They were huge. And they just suddenly started bouncing off of the lights in our like kind of arched ceiling. You know, think an attic. And I'm still like, this is fucked up, and you should have seen me, everyone. I just want you to imagine me in my attic with a vacuum, vacuum-like wand, screaming and, like, trying to suck up these moths into this vacuum wand thing. It was pretty comical. But then the last straw for me was, well, two things. One was I woke up with three scratches on my back.
No.
Yep. And then I was at work and had Spotify going, mm-hmm. and I put my Spotify playlist on pause to go to the bathroom, paused the music, came back to my desk after the bathroom, and Don't Fear the Reaper was playing on my headphones, even though I had paused the music before I left.
Was that on your playlist?
No, and it wasn't on my playlist.
All right, that's what's fucked up.
Yeah. So, at that point, that's when I was like, okay, I think we are dealing with something here.
There's something affecting you.
Yeah. So I made my poor husband follow me around the house. I got a sage, you know, sage stick thing. And I said, okay, I'm opening all the windows in the house. And as I walk through each room, close the window as I leave the room. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but I also created a playlist of extremely uplifting, happy music. And I'm happy to report, ladies and gentlemen, that was almost 2 years ago and nothing has happened since. So that's why the quote-unquote, they.
Internet.
the internet says, if you don't think you're going to have that reaction, then don't even try to do what I did.
If there's a chance that based on your predisposition, your faith, your pre-beliefs, that you might not be able to stand up to these kinds of things and acknowledge that you are in control, then it's not you who should be taking it on. No. It's somebody else.
No. Call your local paranormal mm-hmm. group or a trusted spiritual person that you know, or a priest.
And actually, we do at this very, very far end of the spectrum of demonic hauntings, we do have an example that we think might fit into that category.
Now, the one that I never really tell people is just because it's been like literally since I was little and still like an ongoing, nothing will get rid of this spirit at all, as it's just like actually attached. And I don't, well, so when I was little, like I would see something always kind of near me, but I never paid attention to it because I was little and kind of used to it and doing my own little kid stuff. Until I got probably when I was 13, I was laying in my bed and I woke up. It was summer vacation. It was right before I turned 13. And I woke up from my nap and I saw the clock and it said like 4 something. And then I just felt so queasy. All of a sudden, I thought maybe I got up too fast, but then I saw something in front of me, and it was kind of staticky and black, and it pushed me back onto my bed, and I just went back to sleep like a light. And it was so weird because I fell back asleep, but I wasn't asleep. It was like I was in some sort of place in my mind, just like, and I was looking in emptiness. It was all dark around me. And something came from the darkness and said something that I never understood what they said, but I knew they were trying to say something. And then all of a sudden disappeared, and I, quote-unquote, woke back up. And when I looked at my clock, that was when it creeped me out a little bit because it said it was, like, 1:13 or something. And I was just like, okay, it's not 4. And again, like I said earlier, I tried to rationalize that. I was like, well, you know, maybe I just had a dream and that I was dreaming, you know, that dreamception thing. And then a week or so later, when I turned 13, I started having just these weird dreams with that same thing. Until I was in the shower one day and I heard like, I told you I'm Christian, but I've never read the Book of Enoch, never. But I heard a passage that said, it said something like, and they fell, the sons of God fell unto, you know, the earth, and because of the women, basically. I heard stuff like that, and I was like, what the heck am I hearing that from? I'm like, what's that from? So I looked it up. And it was from the Book of Enoch. And I was like, well, that's weird. You know, maybe I'd seen it before. And, you know, it just replayed my mind. Well, that same night, I went to bed and I sort of just meditated to try to, you know, keep my spirits up. Mm-hmm. And I heard someone say, I don't like saying the name, but I'll say it for you, Arachiel. That's the name that I was given. And now I had never seen this name. I had never heard this name. I did not know what this name meant, but I heard it, and I was like, what the heck? And so I did some research, and I found out that he was like one of the 20 watchers of the 200 fallen angels. And I was like, is that who's been around me? And I heard, yeah. Like, I heard yes, like a clear, loud yes. And that following, like a while, like maybe 2-3 weeks after that, I had this dream where I was walking and then all of a sudden lights were being lit and I could see a path in front of me and I could hear music. And now this music sounded so familiar. And I was like, don't I have like a old music box that plays this song? So I just kept walking towards the music, and it led me to this small little closet-like room. And it was on the floor, playing the music, and I picked it up, and I felt something behind me. And when I turned around, there this thing was that I had been seeing for months now. And I got a full look at it, and it was just tall, like really tall, had like a black outfit on, huge, huge dark black wings, like sprouted from his back. And I just felt so terrified. I pushed him with all my might, and I ran. And I was screaming and begging to just wake up, wake up, wake up. You need to wake up. And I heard people saying, wake up now, like you're not good. And I bolted out of bed, sweating, out of breath. And when I blinked in front of me, I just saw this single black feather, like, fall onto my bed. And has your mom ever seen this thing? Have you talked to her about it at all?
My mom has never seen this thing. One night after I had told her everything, because I was just going actually a little bit crazy from keeping it to myself, she said that night after I told her that, she woke up because she heard something move. And when she looked up by her mirror, she saw this huge black figure that looked like it had wings. So that's when she knew that I wasn't just like seeing things or dreaming.
So the real distinction that I felt was important here was Emily's faith. I think that what's unique amongst the stories we've heard so far is that Emily has some real faith. Mm-hmm. She said she was raised as a Christian. Mm-hmm. And what I think really stands out in this story is that whatever spirit was manifesting itself to her was manifesting itself in a way that was absurdly stressful to her. It was manifesting itself as Arachiel, you know, one of the fallen angels in the Book of Enoch. What I read about Arachiel in particular is that his name means, in so many words, world of this distortion, which is interesting to me because it really, he appeared in a lot of ways. She couldn't tell at times when it was dream, when it was real life.
Clearly for Emily, it's been hard for her. Mm-hmm. It seems like she's balancing this, like, I'm terrified, I don't even want to say the name. And also, like, this is something I've been dealing with since I was a kid, and I've learned to meditate, and I've learned to kind of do things to cope with this. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting. So I think it is important to kind of do what feels right for you in these situations.
Right, and find a way, regardless of what that way is, to make your space your home.
And it sounds like he hasn't done anything that's particularly, like, violent or malicious towards her. Mm-hmm. And if you're in a situation where you think things are violent and malicious towards you, like we mentioned earlier, don't fuck around.
No.
Call somebody.
Don't call somebody who's going to charge you a fee either.
Yes,
call exactly. Somebody who actually is going to offer you help and offer you solace.
But I do want to mention, too, if you do notice that it's just triggered, like, activity is triggered around one particular person, mm-hmm. then it might be the poltergeist. And actually, you might want to look into getting help for that person.
That is a good point. It's important, those situations, to make sure that person has the right outlet, the right sort of counseling that they need to make sure that their emotional needs are being met.
There's no shame in talking to somebody.
No.
So, in conclusion, if you are ever experiencing any haunting that you don't feel comfortable with, regardless of what category you think it fits into, regardless of whether you think people are going to take it seriously, it is important to make sure that you reach out to people who can help you.
And it's important to not try to fix it yourself. If you like are scared and you're freaked out that this might be a thing that's happening, it's really important to then reach out to your local priest, your local healer, whatever it is that feels right to you. Bring in some big guns in those situations.
If for no other reason that If you share that burden, you will no longer be as afraid as you were, and it will no longer exercise that much control over you that it was.
Great point.
And it doesn't matter if you think it's real or not. This is true of everything that you do.
Booyah. Mm-hmm. So thank you, everybody.
Yeah.
We are continuing to collect stories. If you have any to add to our collection, please do give us a call or email us. Our email is themidnightsocietyae@gmail.com. You can also call us at 978-938-4BOO or 978-938-4266.
Please let us put you in one of our four categories, most ideally in the demonic.
No, I don't want demonic. Thank you for joining us. Mm-hmm. We'll talk to you next time.
Yep. Until next time.
Goodbye.
Bye.